Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. It is the detective's dictum: to catch a thief, think like a thief. To prevent a crime, you have to case a joint like a potential infiltrator. Look for the weak spots, the air shafts, sewer tunnels, exposed walls and rooftops that become scenes of crimes and getaways, which means you have to think like an architect. That is one tactic, anyway, played out with a mad scientist delight by Jeff Mano in A Burglar's Guide to the City. The book gives readers a pair of X-ray glasses, presenting the built environment through the eyes of former bank robbers, cops, FBI agents, and panic room builders, among others, along with the mechanics of some historic heists. And Jeff Mano, who is not a burglar, but author of Building Blog and the book, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
I think this is the first book that I've ever seen categorized as architecture slash true crime.
I was secretly delighted to see that, actually. It's not a combination you run into very often.
But you do make a point that burglary requires architecture. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's an interesting crime because you can't have burglary without buildings. So it literally requires an individual to be inside a structure of some kind in order to be considered a burglar. And so burglary is legally defined by its relationship to architecture, but also has a kind of technical relationship to the built environment that I found really fascinating, which is that burglars look at buildings in ways that homeowners or architects themselves tend not to. So they'll see a front door, but that will be the very thing that they'll avoid. They'll see a wall, but instead of assuming that it's something they're meant to walk along, they'll try to get through it. They'll even find a way to cut down through a roof or other ways to access or engage with architecture that is much more aggressive and much more hands-on, but is a kind of an alternative way of dealing with buildings. And so all of that really made me want to look at architecture and cities from the point of view of a burglar to understand what they see and how it reveals something different. You know, where you and I might see the aesthetics of a building or the historic references of the ornaments on the outside of a building, a burglar will see a convenient handhold or a place to hide. And that was a point of view I really wanted to explore more with the book.
We meet a lot of successful and not so successful criminals in your book. One of them, the ingenious George Leonidas Leslie. He studied architecture in Cincinnati before coming to New York in 1869. Could have made it probably as a legitimate architect, but became a master thief. Why?
The psychological reasons are, you could debate those, I think, endlessly. What's interesting, I think, is how he realized that the skills he had as an architect, that he was able to understand how a building could be constructed, how its internal systems would work, was also perfect knowledge for a burglar, that if he could build something, he could also break into something. There's something really interesting about that, I think, because, we tend to trust architects. Why would you mistrust somebody who comes along and says that they have been working on a building or they're designing a house and they would love to see the blueprints of your house? They're trying to understand maybe how to put a wraparound porch or how the master bedroom could fit above the garage. But what Leslie was doing when he asked those same kinds of questions in the 19th century cornering bankers at cocktail parties and asking to see their blueprints was that he was kind of amassing spatial information about the city so that he could case buildings better. He would draw his own plans of the buildings that he would walk through. He would, as I mentioned, take a look at other people's blueprints. And eventually, he really kind of had architectural knowledge of the East Coast that was so extensive that at one point, his bank crew was so good, they were behind 80% of all the bank crime in the United States, which is almost every crime of breaking and entering from a bank point of view of that era, which really shows that architectural knowledge, when put to the wrong end, can be a really effective tool for criminals.
One of the other things that you write about him is that he would create these elaborate scale models of constructions right down to the furniture.
Yeah, it was really an impressive undertaking, and kind of revealed that, that this was his way of going into architecture. So rather than avoiding an architectural career, he just sort of created his own alternative path. He worked with a colleague, a really interesting woman in her own right, who was named Marm Mandelbaum. She was a fence who would sell his stolen goods. but she had a series of warehouses over in Brooklyn, and this is where he would build extremely elaborate three-dimensional models of the banks that they would attack. And so, as you mentioned, it would be down all the way to the furniture. So if there was a table or a chair that they had to avoid and not bump into in the middle of the night, he would actually have his cohorts train in the darkness with a stopwatch until they were so good that they weren't bumping into anything. And it was only after they had mastered the art of the heist on these kind of surrogate interiors that they would then head out and actually hit the bank that they were actually targeting.
So in order to prevent thievery, you have to know how a thief would plan things out, like this former burglar from Toronto that you met and spoke with. What was his trick? How did he infiltrate buildings?
Yeah, he was a really interesting individual and certainly the most creative burglar or former burglar that I spoke to for the book. But he also revealed that we are surrounded by vulnerabilities that we don't see, and sometimes because those vulnerabilities are invisible. So what I mean by that was that he realized that he could actually use the city's fire code as a targeting mechanism. So he was so creative in his approach that he had memorized how fire code shaped buildings, how it regulated the design of interiors, how it tried to keep people safe by putting apartment doors a certain fixed distance from emergency escape stairs inside of a building, to even what floors have alarmed doors for those same emergency escapes. And he could have a pretty accurate understanding of how a building was designed and how many people lived in it and even how big the apartments were, all without setting foot inside the building. And so this notion that the very code of the city can be turned into a burglar's tool was really, sort of flipped my understanding of the city on its head, and also revealed that something that is meant to protect us, something that is meant to keep us safe in a fire so that we can escape and get outside to the street without being caught up in an inferno, can, if used by the wrong people, be turned into something much more sinister as a way in. So similar to George Leonidas Leslie, who realized that his knowledge of how banks are constructed could be used to become an ideal bank robber, this individual in Toronto really kind of revealed that everything about a city, if looked at from the wrong, illicit, or devious angle, can be turned into something that we need protection from.
So now he's working in home security. But yeah. You run down through a number of almost tragicomic would-be burglars getting trapped in air shafts or pet doors or between sheets of drywall. But one called the Roofman was much more adept. What was the key to his success?
Yeah, Roofman was another really interesting and creative individual whose modus operandi was that he would break into chain stores and fast food restaurants. And he had realized that in the repetitive floor plans of things like McDonald's or Toys R Us, and in the regulated schedule of employee events where you would open the register at a certain time of day or count the cash at the end of the day, these all happened at very specific times and in floor plans that could be memorized and would be repeated throughout the country. And so effectively, I compare it to Groundhog Day. He could break into one McDonald's, and if he did that, it was the same as breaking into any other McDonald's, and he would do it at the same time of day to the same kinds of franchised businesses. And eventually, his moniker Roofman came because he had not yet been arrested at the time, but he would break in through the roof. He would cut a hole down through the ceiling, drop down into the kitchen in more or less the same place, and then go about his robbery. But so it's really interesting that, he found a flaw in repetition, that he was able to point out that if all of your floor plans are the same, the vulnerabilities will be the same. And in fact, the Toronto burglar pointed out something very similar, which was that when you go to a new development suburb, where the houses are built to a similar floor plan, except for maybe they're mirrored or maybe they have a bonus room above the garage or that kind of thing. If you know how to break into one house, you basically know how to break into every house in the neighborhood. And so when you think about it from that point of view, you begin to realize that actually there is a way of looking at architecture that is pretty unique to the burglar that can reveal some aspects of the ways that we can learn to protect ourselves or the vulnerabilities that we are surrounded by that we might not have noticed before.
My guest is Jeff Maino. He writes about architecture and design, and he travels into the underworld for perspective on how criminals and those tasked with stopping them look at our built environment. His research included learning to pick locks, riding along with an LAPD helicopter, and getting schooled in the art of the getaway from a former bank robber. The book is called The Burglar's Guide to the City. Well, Jeff, as I mentioned, not only burglars finding ways into buildings, but law enforcement. The FBI TACOPS team especially, they're sort of expert at getting into buildings. What are some of their tactics?
Yeah, that was the funny part of the research, was the realization that a lot of these skills are repeated on the law enforcement side. And so breaking and entering becomes something that is not just limited to burglars, but is actually something that the police, the FBI, ATF, and even fire crews do. But so in terms of the FBI, what you mentioned, there's a really fascinating program that was actually referred to as Operation Stagehand. And so that sounds very pompous and kind of theatrical, but that's actually what it was. It's part of the FBI where you will have elaborate props to hide the fact that you're actually breaking into a mob warehouse to install a microphone. There's actually things that sound like something straight out of a Monty Python sketch. There's a fake umbrellas where when you open the umbrella, it actually looks as if a piece of shrubbery has appeared. And so you can hide behind the bush and use that to give cover to a breaking and entering operation. Or there'll be elaborate costumes so that you look like you work for the gas company or the cable company, and that you'll pop open a manhole so that it looks as if you're, you know, working with infrastructure, but you're actually tapping into a phone line. And so those kinds of things are both theatrical and interesting, but they extend all the way to the kinds of tools that the FBI will use to get into a building. And so, you know, one of the things that interests me there was that I had thought that I would find amongst lockpickers a kind of insight into how one might enter a building without using keys. But in reality, the people who are truly good at that are law enforcement teams, you know, who need to get into a building as fast as possible because they know there is a suspect. They knew they need to capture the suspect before they can flush the evidence or fire back or that kind of thing. And so they've developed a whole series of specialty tools that, if they were to fall into the hands of burglars, would effectively eliminate any sense of security you might have. And so the existence of those tools is something that I really focus on in with one of the chapters of the book. And I found actually one of the most fascinating parts of the research process.
So that's one of the quick ways to combat crime, but there's also a kind of long game for criminals and for law enforcement, almost like a sting or a con in some cases, like in Britain, the capture houses. So what's going on there?
The capture houses are really fascinating. Capture houses are fake apartments run by the police to capture burglars. And so they're actually fully furnished. They even have everyday possessions scattered around to look as if they're a real apartment. But what the police have done is that they will deliberately engineer it so that it corresponds to a known burglar's method of attack. So they'll put a laptop out on the kitchen table and make it look as if the owner's just stepped out for dinner. But they'll also leave a window open so that it's just cracked maybe an inch or two, but just enough to tempt somebody to crawl up and open that window and slip inside. But then they've covered everything, though, with a UV visible tagant, so a spray or a liquid that they'll put on door handles or on the laptop, so that when they then shine a light on anyone who has touched those things, they'll find that they're covered in this glowing liquid. And then, of course, they have surveillance cameras throughout the apartment. But so capture houses are interesting because on one level, they are engineered towards one specific person. You know, if you have one burglar active in a neighborhood or a city, they can be single-handedly responsible for the crime statistics going through the roof. So you try to master exactly what that burglar is hitting, and then you construct exactly what they're looking for. It's almost like a hunting expedition. And then you just simply wait for them to pounce. And so, you know, capture houses have been hit literally within 24 hours of being constructed. Other times it's been more than a year and no one has hit it yet. But so it's a really interesting example of how police are using architecture and design to capture burglars with the same level of innovation that you might have assumed only existed with people like George Leonidas Leslie. So it really is kind of an arms race or like a design war that goes off back and forth between law enforcement and the criminals they're trying to track.
So you show us this solid, orderly metropolis and underneath this, or a parallel, a hidden one. Is that the way you find yourself looking at things now? I mean, do you walk into a bank and start looking at where the cameras are and thinking, could I rob this joint?
Well, I mean, absolutely. Those are details I notice. You know, I notice it when I visit the homes of friends or family. It's the kind of thing I notice when I walk down the street. It's definitely something that I see when I go into an art museum now or am at the bank to deposit a check or that kind of thing. But it's exciting. I mean, I think that the goal there is not to become a burglar or to actually plot a future crime. I think the notion is that suddenly now the city reveals itself as a puzzle that you've lived in all along and you've never noticed. And there are these three-dimensional possibilities that exist where, you know, you can connect one building to the next by going through the sewers, or you can connect an entire neighborhood to the next by following an abandoned subway line. And that if you start noticing how things are connected this way in this alternative underground world that you mentioned, I think it's a really exciting, both intellectually and and spatially to realize that, in fact, the world has more possibilities than we think. And we tend to take it for granted that architects built something in a certain way and that we need to follow the hallways they built and use the doors they put there for us. But in fact, cities present infinite possibilities for movement and connection and exploration. And I think that that's another aspect of thinking like a burglar, is the realization that, there's a lot more to do with the world, and the city offers more routes of things to see and do than we tend to assume.
Well, Jeff Mino, thank you for this alternative view.
Yeah, thanks again for having me.
Jeff Mino, he's author of Building Blog and now A Burglar's Guide to the City. You'll find more in the book at wordofmouthradio.org.